Ardashir, you've an article on the Eugene Weekly about Landon Payne, who died back in March 2020. You detail a very troubling incident about how he was handled by law enforcement, including procedures that became what you call turning points. Before we get into that, what do we know of Landon Payne himself before his death?
Landon Payne, there was a lot of transition very early on in his life. His parents worked in the wine business. They moved around a lot. But his sister said that Oregon was always his home base for him, I guess. And after his parents split up, he moved back to Salem with his mom. Like a lot of teenagers, he struggled with depression, started drinking and smoking weed in high school, and went on to battle substance abuse later on in his life. I don't really have a good grasp on how bad that got as far as his substance abuse, but he did do some time for selling drugs that, in fairness, probably would be considered sort of lower level drugs nowadays. But he got out in his mid-20s, never really was able to hold jobs for too long, was kind of a rolling stone. Also often fell behind on child support payments for a couple of relationships prior to his wife, which is pretty morbid to think about sort of the role that those child support payments played in what ultimately led up to his death. By all accounts, though, was a very bright guy. Very creative and funny. He loved poetry, loved music, especially electronic music. He performed it professionally sort of till his early 30s and kept it as a hobby after that. One other thing I think is important to mention is that 3 years prior in 2017, he had used meth and had a very similar mental health crisis. That time he either fell or jumped out of a second story window and ran off. His wife called Eugene police. They found him wandering on a median on Delta Highway. They told him he's not in trouble, but they're worried about him. So they detained him and took him to the hospital on a mental hold for his safety and was able to stay sort of on the straight and narrow for the next 3 years or so. So just two very different outcomes for a very similar situation with him having a mental health crisis.
Ardashir, can you detail some of those turning points that took place between Payne and law enforcement leading up to his death on March last year?
It's interesting if you look at EPD's policy, it's written in a way where as far as dealing with arrests and mental health crises, officers can do any one of these responses essentially, but it is sort of broken down into if you see these things, this is how you respond. And they can arrest people on warrants. I mean, they have that ability obviously, but they're encouraged to use sound discretion. So when somebody is in that state where they're clearly having a crisis and they're not a danger to themselves or anybody else, they haven't done a serious crime. In his case, it was the contempt warrant that turned out to be unnecessary. They could have taken him to the hospital, which is something they never quite acknowledge. But when I was writing a draft of this story, just sort of for myself, I broke it down into turning points where had the people involved made different or better decisions, he might still be alive. And we ended up leaving those in the story. Turning point number one, the officers make an arrest that was really an unnecessary arrest. Then that arrest deepens his crisis because by all accounts, at least his wife's account is that he had started to sort of calm down when police arrived. And after they tased him and arrest him, he just turned his panic into delirium. He was denied medical help. They didn't take him to a hospital. They took him to jail. I really got the sense that and this is where it starts to get a tiny bit confusing. And I think I should explain the difference in agencies here. You've got the Eugene Police, which is a city agency, and that's the arresting agency. The Lane County Jail is run by the Lane County Sheriff's Office. And so that's why these sheriff's deputies were there. I always got the sense that the jail staff and the deputies did not want to book Landon Payne. They were on pretty high alert during COVID. They were trying to limit their inmates, but that wasn't really an option for them. It's up to the arresting agency. I think the jail captain, Clint Riley, even said, we have no say as to who comes in here. And so they sort of were almost pleading with Officer Jairo Solorio to just cite and release him, or at least asking if he wanted to. And he said no, essentially, because they would just have to deal with him again, he said, essentially. And the last turning point is that they restrain him, holding him down. There's up to 8 deputies, and that's sort of the point of no return.
There were warning signs that were overlooked.
Yeah, the warning signs, I suppose, were that he had extreme fear of pretty much everything around him. You know, he was sort of delusional, scared of his family, scared of police, just scared of people in general, I suppose. I mean, there's no other way to describe it. He was having a mental health crisis. He was just panicked and delusional and not hurting anybody, but scared and under the influence of meth and needed help. I haven't gotten the body cam video from EPD, which is a whole other conversation, but anybody that reads the police reports and talks to his wife can pretty much tell that he needed help. He needed medical help, especially after the use of the taser.
The full circumstances behind Landon Payne's death were kept secret for more than a year. What did he discover led to this cover-up?
There were several different agencies involved in that. It's essentially the medical examiner ruling the death undetermined as opposed to a homicide or an accident, which is really what it came down to. I think really allowed the law enforcement involved to avoid any kind of a criminal investigation. EPD also, if you read the reports, there's sort of a big yellow note on every page that said confidential. And the Marion County Court that they sent those reports back to, where his child support case was, they sealed that record. That was basically the return of service on his warrant, which meant that he was arrested, which is pretty interesting. That was sort of like one of the first things that caught my eyes, this 23-page warrant return of service with a note that says EPD investigation, and it was confidential. EPD did its own investigation. There was no independent investigation, and EPD actually investigated the actions of Lane County Sheriff's deputies, which is sort of an interesting decision from EPD because it seems like washing your hands of the whole thing in a way. I had trouble reaching the family for a while. I left voicemails for his wife and his sister. I sent a letter to his wife, never heard back. And then it sort of occurred to me as I was rereading the police reports that it doesn't seem like they ever really told her what happened. If she was told what the officers wrote, she was basically told that he collapsed. He just collapsed before making it into booking, essentially. And so eventually I sent a letter to the sister and I left a different note on there where I basically said, you know, I'm very concerned that what police are telling you may not be the truth. And I think that's what got her to poke his wife a little bit and say, you might want to give him a call. And she said that's what ultimately led her to do that. And one of the more heartbreaking things I've had to do in my short career is break that news and tell her what happened and listen to her in real time, be shocked and say that she was told that he just collapsed and that's it. And she was sort of, you know, understandably trying to move on with her life because there's not much you can really do. But she spent over a year thinking that that's what happened when she was lied to.
So how was this news received by Landon Payne's family?
They were devastated. You know, his sister said that her trust was broken from this whole thing. And his wife said that she felt lied to, understandably, because she was. And his wife said that she wanted to get an attorney, and she was not able to because she really didn't have any information. I think that they were grateful to find out what happened, but really traumatizing for them to spend a year just sort of trying to not rationalize, but sort of, like I said, move on with their lives as, you know, that's all you can really do. But I think it was very traumatic for them to relive this whole thing and through a different lens, I suppose.
Where has the bulk of your information come from about Payne's death?
Most of it just comes from public records. I ultimately got EPD police reports. I got the autopsy report and the medical examiner's report. I got memos from the sheriff's office written by deputies. I'm sure there's more that I'm forgetting. There was sort of 2 months of just waiting, not really knowing what happened, just sort of vaguely knowing that something tragic happened at the jail somewhat recently. And once I got those police reports, my jaw just sort of dropped as I was reading it. And then all these documents just started coming in. I requested the video from the jail because there's two videos from the sheriff's office. There's one from a body camera and there's one on the wall of the Sallyport, which is where he was restrained. It's essentially like a secure jail garage, if that makes sense, where kind of just outside the booking area. And once I requested that footage, pretty soon after that, Clint Riley, the jail captain, gave me a call. Credit to him for being transparent on this whole thing. He invited me down to the jail to watch the footage and kind of ask any questions I had. And my only condition was that I would get the footage myself. But the medical examiner doesn't talk about individual cases with the press. I contacted him a couple of times, Dan Davis. I got a no comment from EPD, no response from Cliff Harrell, Lane County Sheriff. I think it ultimately just shows that nobody wanted to take responsibility, or still nobody wants to take responsibility for Landon Payne or their roles in what happened to him.
Does this raise concerns about how future cases of mental crises might be handled here in the city of Eugene.
Absolutely. And I think that this probably happens in Eugene and elsewhere more often than a lot of people even think. It just goes unreported. And I think that law enforcement, just in general, aren't as well trained as they could be in dealing with people in mental health crises. And unfortunately, those same people are the ones that have to deal with those folks most of the time. Based on talking to experts, I think a lot of them just also probably forget their training at times. I think that there was one exchange in that video, and that the jail captain even pointed it out, where the sergeant who was on duty at the time, Lance Jester, was talking to Officer Solorio of EPD. And when he's asking him about citing and releasing him, he basically just says, "We didn't have any other option." I think that was his exact quote. And they did have an option. They could have taken him to the hospital, but it really points to the fact that there is really no place for these folks. I know that the jail captain would like to see a crisis center opened up. The district attorney, Patricia Perlow, said that they're working very hard to open a crisis center. And, you know, I'm not an expert, but I think that's absolutely a much better solution. There needs to be a place for people in Landon's state that are having a mental health crisis to be able to go to get the help they need that's not the jail, so they're not treated like a criminal, and that ultimately others don't have to go through what he did and what his family did.
Ardashir Tabrizian, I appreciate your time and information. I hope this article raises awareness to some of the issues you've raised. Thank you again.
Thank you so much, Brian. Appreciate the time. Thanks for having me.